The year is 2000, and we take you to the Los Angeles International Airport for today's visit with Wes Battersea and his guests.
Little old world, hello. This is Wes Battersea bringing you face to face with the people who are going places in this little old world. We're speaking to you from the top of the Mark V launching pad, high above the towers and spires of downtown Los Angeles. And right here in front of our KNX microphone is a very attractive young lady, all decked out in a natty blue uniform. You're a rocket line stewardess, aren't you?
Yes, I'm Shirley Martin with Pan Space Rocket Lines.
Well, are you coming or going, Shirley?
I just arrived from Paris on Hercules 107. I had the day off, so I went shopping.
Sort of a busman's holiday, eh?
Oh, I go to Paris or London or even Rome whenever I get a day off.
Now, you seem to be carrying quite a package there. Did you buy all that in Paris?
Oh, you mean in this bag?
Yeah.
These are my gravity shoes.
Of course, those thick magnetic soles would make them heavy.
They weigh about 14 pounds apiece. You know, we soar at about 100 miles above the Earth, and that's well above the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is weightless in the rocket ship cabin. Except for the magnetic pull as I walk along the passageway, I hardly know when I have them on.
Well, I suppose you use those when you have to catch a floating passenger?
No, as a matter of fact, we keep our passengers in automatic, self-locking seat belts throughout the trip. No one minds, the trips are so short.
Mm-hmm.
But we are kept busy retrieving other objects that get away from passengers, like floating candy wrappers and baby bottles and things like that.
Say, I can see some real floating hazards. A mess of bobby pins. Or a lighted cigar. Worse yet, how about a pair of false teeth? You'd have to snag those fast before someone gets bitten.
Well, that hasn't happened to me yet. But I did have an experience last week. A man's toupee floated off his head over Denver, and it circled a cabin all the way to Pittsburgh before I managed to catch it in my cleanup net.
I'd say that was a hair-raising experience, Shirley. You'll forgive me for that one. I just couldn't resist it. When's your next trip out?
Tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. on Ajax 11, nonstop to Honolulu.
Well, now, let's see. You leave Los Angeles at 7 a.m., and you'll arrive in Honolulu 30 minutes later. Is that right, Shirley?
30 minutes flying time, that's right.
Well, that means you'll get to Honolulu at 4:30 a.m. That's 2.5 hours before you started. Well, happy landing, Shirley. Our next guest on Welcome Rocketeers...
Sound incredible? It may be only an indication of things to come, according to Mr. Hall Hibbard, Senior Engineering Vice President of Lockheed Aircraft Corporation. Mr. Hibbard says,
the year 2000 will find us all in the air. Family airplanes will outnumber automobiles for commuter travel, and rocket ships will carry us across the country and across continents. Such progress technically requires corresponding progress politically. For only in a world at peace can we speed across oceans in half an hour aboard rocket transports, which appear the same on radar as rockets carrying warheads. Our family airplanes will be jets, able to rise and descend vertically and no more difficult to operate than an automobile. I believe speeds around 500 miles an hour will be practical. These planes will open new geographic areas for pleasant living and commuting, several hundred miles from city centers. The one thing of which I am certain is that these predictions for the year 2000 will fall short of our accomplishments, for man never has been able to dream far enough into the future.
The year is 2000, and we take you now to Los Angeles International Airport for today's visit with Wes Battersea and his guests.
Little old world, hello. This is Wes Battersea speaking to you again from the top of the Mark V launching pad, high above the towers and spires of downtown Los Angeles. Heading this way are several rocketeers who only moments ago disembarked the giant rocket ship Ajax 7, flying nonstop from London. Now, here's a pleasant little gray-haired lady. May I have your name, please?
Mrs. Matilda Owen from Suffolk-on-the-Thames.
And what brings you to Los Angeles, Mrs. Owen?
Oh, something very exciting. I'm about to become a grandmother again.
Well, congratulations. And when do you expect this to happen?
Oh, almost any minute now.
Well, that soon, eh? You seem to be quite sure of that.
Oh, yes. You see, about 4 hours ago, I got a phone call from my son-in-law telling me that he was taking Susan, that's my daughter, to the maternity hospital in Laguna.
Now, let me get this straight, Mrs. Owen. 4 hours ago, you were in England, and you got this phone call from California.
From my son-in-law, Dan, telling me that he was taking Susan to the hospital. It took us all by surprise. You see, we didn't expect it to happen for another 2 weeks.
And in time now, you got packed, Got your tickets and raced out here to California trying to beat the storm.
It actually took me only an hour and 40 minutes to get here. I made a good connection getting to the London launching pad by the jetcopter local.
I'd say that's fantastic.
I always say travel light and travel fast. Actually, we were 1 minute early.
Mrs. Owen, with your rate of speed, that stork doesn't stand a chance.
I haven't lost a race in 7 grandchildren. Oh, I really must go now. There's my helicab for Laguna.
That's right. That's it. The red and white one. Thank you, Mrs. Owen.
Sound incredible? It may be only an indication of things to come. According to Mr. Hall Hibbard, Senior Engineering Vice President of Lockheed Aircraft Corporation, Mr. Hibbard says,
the year 2000 will find us all in the air. Family airplanes will outnumber automobiles for commuter travel. And rocket ships will carry us across the country and across continents. Such progress technically requires corresponding progress politically. For only in a world at peace can we speed across oceans in half an hour aboard rocket transports, which appear the same on radar as rockets carrying warheads. Our family airplanes will be jets, able to rise and descend vertically, and no more difficult to operate than an automobile. I believe speeds around 500 miles an hour will be practical. These planes will open new geographic areas for pleasant living and commuting, several hundred miles from city centers. The one thing of which I am certain is that these predictions for the year 2000 will fall short of our accomplishments. For man never has been able to dream far enough into the future.
The year is 2000, and the opinions expressed on the following program are those of the speaker making them and do not necessarily represent the viewpoint of this station or its sponsors.
Good evening, this is Mel Baldwin, and welcome to KNX Radio's 10,671st broadcast of Opinion, Please. The program that for over 41 years has offered you an opportunity to express your opinion on matters of interest. Now let's see who we have on the line first tonight. Good evening. This is Opinion, Please. May I have your name?
My name is George Spelvin, and I live in Oxnard.
Pardon me, Mr. Spelvin, but would you please turn your radio off in the background, sir?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Here. Well, my opinion is on the transportation problem. I work in Long Beach, and I take the jet rail from Oxnard every morning. And now I hear they're thinking of stopping that service. I know most people prefer to fly the bus plane, but there are a lot of us who still prefer the jet rail. I may be old-fashioned, but I believe that if the jet rail people would put on some additional services, you know, like hot coffee, that people would use it a lot more.
Well, according to the reports, sir, from the Jet Rail Authority, they contend that the bus plane service is much faster and much more convenient, and that this is the reason their traffic has now dropped to the point where there just isn't enough profit to keep operating. Do you think the speed factor is the reason, sir?
People are too speed crazy anyway. The jet rail makes it from Oxnard to Long Beach in 17 minutes, and if a person can't afford to spend 17 minutes sitting down, then there's something wrong with him.
Do you happen to know the bus plane time from Oxnard to Long Beach, sir?
Well, that's only 6 minutes, sure, but you don't even have time to read the paper. I've taken the bus plane. You just sit down and relax, and bang, you have to get up and get off. As far as I'm concerned, they should keep the jet rail and try to get more people to quit all this hurry, hurry, and sell them on service and comfort. That's my opinion.
All right, sir. Well, thank you very much for taking part in our program. May I have your name, please?
My name is Elsie Gridley, and I've been listening to people call in discussing the 30-hour work week.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I think people who complain about having to work 30 hours a week should think back to the 1950s and 1960s when we all had to work 40 hours every week. And a lot of us had to drive cars to work on the old jammed-up freeways. Why, we'd spend a whole hour just getting to work and back, and we'd be away from home for as much as 10 hours every day. Well, nowadays, people either have their own jet copter or take the bus plane, and they're only gone from home maybe 6.25, 6.5 hours.
One of the reasons a great number of people are for the new 5 and maybe 4 hour work day is because it will give them more leisure time.
Oh, I know all about that, but people are getting just plain lazy. Women call in the household cleaning company every week. They have all the new electronic gadgets just so they can work at a job like the men. Well, when I was young, a woman's place was in the home. We didn't go flitting off to Arizona every afternoon to lie in the sun, and we didn't try to become business executives either. I say women should quit trying to be men, and men should quit bellyaching about having to work a 6-hour day. That's my opinion.
Mrs. Gridley? Oh, thank you very much for calling. You're listening to KNX Radio's Opinion, Please, for this Wednesday evening. If you'd like to take part in our program, just dial...
Sounds startling. Oxnard to Long Beach in 17 minutes? A 30-hour work week or less? Not according to Dr. Edward C. McDonough, head of the Sociology Department at the University of Southern California. Dr. McDonough says...
The changing status that women won't make the only change in the social structure of the year 2000. The blue-collar workers will then be making as much as the white-collar workers. And the difference in the social classes will be determined not so much by income, but how the income is spent. Presumably, in the year 2000, two Rembrandts will do more for a family socially than one deluxe four-passenger family jet.
The year 2000. The scene, the central launching pad of one of the world's busiest international airports. New York's LaGuardia Field, high above Manhattan's towers.
Is this seat taken?
No. Here, I'll move my briefcase. Sit down.
Thanks very much. Oh, boy, this feels good. My name's Bill Thompson, by the way.
Frank Edwards, Bill.
Pleased to meet you, Frank. You live here in New York?
No, Los Angeles. I had to come to New York on business this morning. I'm just heading back home.
Oh, incidentally, what time is it in Los Angeles? I forgot to set my watch when we left London this afternoon.
Let's see, I've been on New York time all day. It's 8:30 New York time, 5:30 L.A. time.
Let me set my watch. 5:30. Yeah, there.
How was London?
Don't ask me. I've made 6 trips there in the past 3 weeks and haven't had time to even unpack my bag.
Really keeping you busy, huh? What's your line of work?
Engineering. I'm with the Moon Team Administration.
Moon Team? Say, I've been reading about you guys. How's the progress from that base camp you boys have up there?
Well, we're up to hearing new facts, and if information is progress, then we're progressing all right.
You made the moon trip yet?
I just got back a month ago. That's why I've been practically commuting to London. We're working pretty closely with the British expedition.
Boy, I envy you guys. When I look up at night and see the space reload platform, I wish I could get even that far. But making that trip to the moon, that'd be something all right.
Well, a lot of fellas have made the trip since the first team landed 12 years ago. I was stationed on Lunar Hill 10. It's a telescope station.
Yeah, I read about that. You boys must see a lot of
Good
traffic,
evening,
huh?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your stewardess speaking. Welcome to Transease Airlines, Flight 72, New York to Los Angeles.
Here comes the instruction
manual.
We'll
be leaving New York in just 2 minutes. The New York time will be 8:35 p.m. We will arrive Los Angeles in 35 minutes, landing at 6:10 Pacific Coast time. We will be flying at an altitude of 100 miles. Please fasten your seat belts and recline your lounge chairs for takeoff. Thank
35
you
minutes to L.A., 100-mile peak. With a trajectory like that, I'd better snap down my briefcase or it'll hit the ceiling.
Say, one thing about those moon stations. I heard something about the moon team reporting some mysterious radio frequencies of some kind. What's your theory on that? You think the Jupiter expedition will find any life on other planets?
Well, I think it'd be pretty conceited of us to assume we're the only intelligent beings in this or any other solar system. Those frequencies we've heard have formed some pretty consistent patterns. So I doubt if it's just solar flare-up, as some think.
Well, by patterns, you mean you think it's a form of communication, language, or code, I mean?
If they ever get the deciphering units to come up with a breakdown, I think we're going to have to face the fact that there's somebody out there, so to speak.
Boy, I've seen some pretty amazing things since I was a kid. Scientifically speaking, I mean. First moon landing, the space platform, rocket flights coast to coast in 35 minutes. But I just can't stretch out my imagination far enough to admit that there's somebody else out there, that somebody out there is sending messages. I mean, somebody, you know? A person or being or whatever they are.
Well, I guess we represent the two schools of thought then.
How's that?
Well, I can't comprehend there isn't somebody out there.
Take off in 10 seconds, please.
You know, I wish this flight was heading out there instead of just to Los Angeles.
Scheduled passenger service? Oh, you wait 30, maybe 40 years. There will be.
Then I hope I'm around for the next 40 years.
A page from science fiction? Coast to coast in 35 minutes? Regular trips to the moon? Expeditions to Jupiter? From Bill and Frank's conversation, 2000 A.D., let's jump back to the present, 1960. What do the experts say? Here is Mr. Brian Sparks, Deputy Director of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena. Mr. Sparks.
It is highly likely that within the next 40 years, a manned expedition will have landed on the moon, explored the problems of sustaining life on the moon's atmosphere, and with the solution of these problems, established a regular camp. It won't be a handy weekend campsite for the family, however. The teams of scientists on the moon will probably be much the same as today's South Pole expeditions on strictly scientific missions. By the year 2000, man will be well on the way towards solving some of the mysteries that have so long evoked his awe, reverence, and wonder.
The year is 2000. The scene, the garden apartment of a typical middle-income family in Southern California.
Are you home, honey?
Hi. I'm out here on the terrace getting a little natural sun for a change.
Oh.
Hard day at the office?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you wanted to be a lawyer.
Why didn't somebody tell me that a lawyer had to work 30 hours a week?
Well, one of these days, automation will catch up with you lawyers, and you'll be able to work a 20-hour week like the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. Hey, where are the children?
Well, Susan went to visit Barbara up at the desert, and Bill is in Denver on some sort of a Boy Scout affair.
Denver?
No, he'll be home for dinner. After all, you have to allow a young man of 15 some freedom.
Well, you're right, of course. Did he go with a group?
Mm-hmm. They chartered a supersonic jet.
Oh, well, it's nice to know he's safe. It's expensive, though.
Only $20 round trip.
Well, that's quite a bit.
Oh, for heaven's sake. You make $25,000 a year, and so do I. We have to give the children some niceties. Well, look at the Morgans. Their boy, well, I'll admit he's 19, but they let him go to London every weekend to visit his girlfriend.
19 and in love.
You were only 19 when we got married in 1980.
Oh, that seems such a long time ago. You remember, honey, we took our honeymoon in a car.
And it was fun, too. These kids today don't know what they're missing.
Oh, come on, let's go inside. This light's beginning to hurt my eyes.
Oh, by the way, my vacation for this month is due the day after tomorrow. I thought I'd spend the week in Brazil. Do you want to come along?
No, thanks. I might run down for the weekend, but Bill Palmer's coming in from the moon next week on that interplanetary space dispute, and I should be here. I tried to settle it by phone, but it just didn't work out. By the way, he doesn't look well at all on the monitor.
Oh, all he needs is an Earth vacation.
Try to tell him that.
Well, some people still work too hard. It's going to get him before he's 100 if he doesn't ease off.
Well, I told him today he ought to see Dr. Randall and have his anxiety complexes removed. He's just too old-fashioned.
Don't you make the same mistake.
Oh, I've promised myself. I'm going to ease off to 25 hours a week beginning the first of the year.
Good. A proper resolution for the year 2001.
And now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to take a nap before the kids get home.
A nap?
Now, don't start lecturing me. I know I don't need it. The injections and the proper exercise and all that are supposed to make it unnecessary for me to sleep more than 4 hours a day. But I just feel like it. And I'm going to do it.
My old-fashioned wife. Go ahead, take a nap. You know, I might join you.
Sound a little far-fetched? In the year 2000, that scene may be reality, according to the experts. Dr. Edward C. McDonough, head of the Department of Sociology at the University of Southern California, puts it this way.
By the year 2000, a fact long accepted by half the population will be accepted by all, and it will be responsible for a rather complete overhaul of our daily life. The fact is, there are just as many bright women as there are bright men. In the year 2000, a woman will enter her chosen profession with very little resistance, and the accepted work week will be short enough to allow for both a career and marriage. A wife with or without a career will be thought of more as a domestic engineer than as a housewife.
The year is 2000. Our setting, the laboratories at Palos Verdes, as meteorologist Thomas R. Wood explains some of the equipment to Senator John Boardman.
I guess I'll never get used to it, Mr. Wood. I mean, looking at the Earth from a distance of 1,000 miles.
Yes, Senator, this picture we're looking at now is being transmitted by our number 6 weather eye, which is passing over the coast at this very moment.
I see. What are those white spots that seem to be floating on the ocean?
Those are stratocumulus clouds, Senator. And you're right, they do seem to be floating on the water, don't they? Actually, they're more than a mile above the ocean, and as you'll see in a few moments, those white patches will band together to make some ugly business for the ocean down below.
Ugly business?
Yes, within an hour, there'll be 40-knot winds in that area, and the seas will be running high. I wouldn't want to be there in a boat.
I see what you mean.
Looks harmless from here, doesn't it? But that gathering storm is right over the east-west shipping lanes.
Well, then I imagine your weather bureau here will be sending out warnings to ships at sea?
We already have.
But when?
While you and I have been talking, this information has been transmitted by radio to anyone who wants it.
But is that done from here?
Sure. Let's walk over here. This computer is called a correlator. It receives every piece of information about the weather from any desired area, matches one report, such as temperature, against another, such as wind velocity. Then it correlates this into an exact weather picture and passes it on in code form to the transmitter in the next room.
Well, that's fantastic.
Sometimes we think so, too. It does these things almost instantaneously.
What attention do these computers need, Mr. Wood?
Well, of course, even though they make what appears to be miraculous decisions and analyses, they still have to be fed controlled information. And that's where the meteorologist is kept busy.
Yes, I can imagine. I noticed you were absorbed in the weather map of Mexico when I came in.
Oh, that. Well, I'm afraid that wasn't a very scientific project, Senator. You see, I'm going to Mexico on my vacation, and I was studying the weather for that area.
Oh. Well, what did you find?
I found that there's a storm raging in Acapulco, so I plan to arrive there next Tuesday morning.
A storm? Well, then why are you going?
Oh, the storm's going to end Monday night.
Exact weather forecasts? Fantastic? Not at all. Mr. Brian Sparks, deputy director of the California Institute of Technology's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, has this to say in that regard.
The prospect of exact weather forecasting actually calls for no flight of imagination whatsoever. We have learned already how to project forecasts into the near future with a great degree of accuracy. With the added data supplied by satellites equipped with the very latest weather recording instruments and orbiting high above the Earth, the matter of predicting weather will be greatly facilitated. We will be able to be in on the birth of storms, to watch them as they grow and take shape, and to pinpoint their progress so that the preparation may be made before they strike.